It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today it's a legislative Monday during the legislative session in Des Moines. We like to keep up on topics, debate, and bills that are making their way through the legislature with my co-host Katarina Sestoric, IPR state government reporter. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
And also joining us this hour, O.K. Henderson, news director for Radio Iowa. Kay, welcome
greetings
to the program.
And salutations.
Greetings and salutations back at you. Stephen Gruber-Miller is with us as well, State House reporter for the Des Moines Register. Stephen, nice you could step in as well.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
And this hour, because last week was the so-called funnel week, I guess simply put, this is... bills have to survive the first funnel deadline. And this means that they move forward only if they were passed out of a full committee in the House or Senate. So we want to talk primarily about the bills that have advanced, but also talk about some of them a little bit later that have died for this session. In the category still alive, felon voting, medical cannabis, banning cell phone use while driving. We'll talk about those a little bit later. But let's start off by talking about legislation. A number of bills having to do with abortion. Katarina Sestoric, remind us a little bit what's being discussed and what made it through the funnel.
There are several bills related to abortion that made it through the funnel. One major one is the proposed constitutional amendment that would amend the Iowa Constitution to say it doesn't protect abortion rights. That actually passed the full Iowa Senate already, so it's kind of in the House's court now. And then there's also a few that advanced out of a House committee surviving the funnel deadline, one that would require abortion providers to inform patients that it might be possible to reverse a medication abortion, even though the nation's leading association of OBGYN says there's not enough scientific evidence to back up that claim. There's also a bill that would require women who had a miscarriage, abortion, or stillbirth to choose burial or cremation for the fetal remains. And then also one that would put additional licensing requirements on abortion facilities. One abortion-related bill that did not survive the funnel would have required a 72-hour abortion waiting period. That's something that the Iowa Supreme Court has already struck down, but something similar to that might pop up again later in the session.
Kay Henderson, give us some background here. Why this slew of abortion-related legislation?
Well, this is a priority for Republicans. It's been part of the GOP platform for a couple of decades, number one. And we do have a new development on this front today. Susan Christensen, who was appointed by Governor Reynolds to the Iowa Supreme Court in 2018, has just been elected by her peers to be Chief Justice of the Iowa Supreme Court. Governor Reynolds has appointed three members of that court. She will soon appoint a fourth member when Justice Wiggins retires sometime in March and steps off the court. And as Katarina mentioned, I guess priority one, if you ask Republicans and this group of abortion-related legislation, would be the proposed constitutional amendment that says that the Iowa Constitution does not confer a right to an abortion. It relates to an opinion that was issued by a completely differently constituted court and written by the late Chief Justice Katie.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, jump in here, perhaps where Kay left off there. This context is very important. We are the makeup of the Iowa Supreme Court shifting even today, but also the federal Supreme Court. What are your thoughts? What can you share with us in terms of how this context is important to the bills we're discussing?
Right. Like Kay was saying, it's been less than 2 years since the Iowa Supreme Court found a right to abortion in the Iowa Constitution, which actually gives Iowa greater abortion protections than exist federally at this moment. The constitutional amendment that Republicans in the legislature are proposing would undo that, and basically then Iowa would have to follow whatever the federal standard is. Of course, President Trump has appointed two justices to the U.S. Supreme Court and making it possibly a more conservative court that might be less inclined to rule in favor of abortion.
And I would say, just adding to that, the lawmaker who proposed this new abortion waiting period bill that has not advanced, when asked, you know, why did you propose something that's already been struck down, he said, well, we have a new court.
Mm. Okay. So,
and
Kay,
that is something that is technically, that proposal is technically no longer eligible because it did not clear the funnel deadline. But I would expect that it is resurrected in some form on some other piece of legislation, which often occurs in this building.
Kay Henderson is with us, news director of Radio Iowa, Katarina Sestarek of IPR, and Stephen Gruber-Miller of the Des Moines Register. We're talking about primarily about bills this week, today, that passed through the funnel deadline set last week. Join our conversation. Which legislation are you hoping, pieces of legislation are you hoping will become law? Perhaps you're disappointed that certain legislation didn't make it through this first funnel deadline. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Well, it's certainly not hard to go out on any city street or anywhere in Iowa and not take long to find someone, perhaps it's even you, who are driving while using your cell phone to do whatever, all the things that cell phones do for us today. Stephen, we may have a ban on cell phone use if this legislation makes its way through. This passed through this hurdle last week.
That's right. Like you were saying, there's a bill that passed through the funnel that would ban handheld cell phone use while you're driving. This is something that lawmakers have tried to do a few times now. So we'll see if this is the year that it happens. But, you know, a couple of years ago, they made it a primary offense to be texting and driving. But it's something that law enforcement says is hard to enforce because you can still be using your phone for like a GPS or something like that. So a complete handheld ban, law enforcement thinks, would make it easier to enforce and stop people from using their phones while they're driving.
Mm-hmm. Kay Henderson, thoughts on this? So we've seen this progression from a secondary offense mm-hmm. in a previous session to a primary offense, I guess, a couple of years ago, and now further restriction. Thoughts on what's driving that?
Well, it's interesting in that I recall Governor Branstad having a news conference and actually coming out foursquare in favor of this proposal, and it's taken a long time for it to percolate through the legislature. I think one thing that may make this easier for legislators to embrace is the development of technology that lets people talk on their cell phones while they're driving without actually holding the cell phone in their hand. So it's gotten progressively easier to take this step by lawmakers because of that technology.
And also, is it not so, Kay, that law enforcement is increasingly in favor of this? They're in a gray area now, as you know, Stephen just described, that you can have the cell phone in your hand. Mm-hmm. If you're not texting, you're not breaking mm-hmm. the law. So how is anyone to know what you're doing, right?
Right. And the other thing that we're hearing from law enforcement is that distracted driving is becoming an ever greater issue. And as you mentioned, you drive around, you see people distracted by things inside the car, and it's not necessarily the person in the passenger seat. It's the thing that is attracting their attention as a piece of technology.
So what do we think about the future of this? Will this make it through? What are the chances? Thoughts from our panel today?
Hard to say, I think, given the fact that this has been, you know, something that's been tried, you know, every year for the past few years, more or less. You know, I think every year there's a little bit more support. I'm not sure, though, what the chances are this year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and each the House and Senate each have a bill on this, so that could indicate more support. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
Would we expect people to be giving a testimony here, personal testimony? Not too long ago on this program, I was sadly interviewed a mother who had lost at least two of her children, and another one was disabled when she was rear-ended on a rural road here in Iowa. And the man now sits in prison who did it. He was didn't even break. He rear-ended him. He was using his cell phone. Are we likely to see that sort of testimony?
We already have over the course of the past few years. The aforementioned Terry Branstad news conference featured actually the classmates of an Eastern Iowa student who was killed by a texting driver. And in other arenas, the legislature has enhanced penalties if you are using a cell phone while you're driving and you cause a fatal accident. So this has been on the legislature's radar for at least a decade.
Mm-hmm. Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100, talking about legislation that is still alive in the Iowa legislature, meaning that it passed through the funnel deadline last week. Proposals moving forward if they were passed out of full committees in either chamber. 1-866-780-9100. Here's a priority of the governor. A comment on this, Katarina Fallon, voting. This is where Iowa is really an outlier in terms of felon voting, restoring voting to felon once they've served them time, an outlier compared to other states, right?
Yeah, Iowa is still the only state that has a policy of lifetime disenfranchisement for people who have felony convictions unless they appeal directly to the governor to get that changed. And so this has been a priority of Governor Kim Reynolds to pass a constitutional amendment that would change that. So it's something that passed the House last year, and so now the Senate has to pass the constitutional amendment for it to get past this big first hurdle. It's a long process to amend the Constitution. And they have instead advanced restrictions on felon voting if that constitutional amendment passes. So that's something that they worked on, and actually most Democrats on the committee that advanced that also supported that policy. It would limit, it would keep people who are convicted of murder, manslaughter, some sex offenses from getting automatic rights restoration. And then it would also require people to pay victim restitution before getting their voting rights restored. So that's something that has advanced. And the Senate Republicans say that that now puts them in a position where they could potentially consider that constitutional amendment. Meanwhile, the House committee advanced a bill that would restore felon voting rights through state law rather than a constitutional amendment. And Kay, you had the opportunity to hear from Governor Reynolds on Friday. Right. What did she say about that?
She's basically leaving it up to legislators to sort of wrestle with this issue. She has made it clear that she supports the amendment, and she's made it clear that she supports them if they draft some additional legislation for implementing said amendment should it pass. And, you know, we should mention that it takes a long time to amend the Constitution. That's several years from this point of time when we are speaking to you. The other thing that happened on the same day that the Senate Judiciary Committee passed out the bill that Katarina referenced is that a three-judge panel of a federal appeals court ruled that Florida's law in this regard that would require felons to pay both restitution and court-related fees and fines was unconstitutional. And when Republican lawmakers who are crafting this legislation were asked about this, they indicated, well, it's not a poll tax if we're just dealing with victim restitution, which their proposal does. As I mentioned, the Florida law also requires the payment of court fees and fines.
I want to pick up on Kay's point here and just kind of say that this aspect of the bill that requires full restitution to be paid is something that a lot of people are concerned about, given that restitution could be hundreds or thousands of dollars. And if you're asking felons to fully pay off that amount in addition to completing their sentence, they're saying that this is something that would stop people from voting for years or possibly ever. Republicans who support it say that they want to make the victim whole, and that should be the first priority. They need to pay their debt to society, and that includes money they may owe to the victim.
Currently, people with felony convictions who apply to the governor for voting rights restoration just have to show that they are on a payment plan for paying off their restitution and other fines. They don't actually have to have it fully paid off. So something that Governor Reynolds has said in the past is she doesn't want to make it harder than it already is to get your voting rights restored.
I wonder if you've heard any debate in the legislature, in committees, subcommittees on this, relating to how other states deal with this, how much restitution, when should you be granted your voting at the beginning of repaying your restitution or when it's fully paid. Is there any discussion about that?
Well, they've been debating that for the past couple of years, and there were some very compelling subcommittee hearings last year where people who had turned their lives around came and testified, and the governor has begun calling some of the folks for whom she's restored voting rights and telling them that their voting rights are restored, and been having some very poignant discussions. She's made clear this is a second chance agenda for her. In regards to discussion about what's happening in other states, I would just point out that there's a national debate about restorative justice that the Trump administration is engaged in. Republican Senator Rand Paul made this an issue during his race for the White House in 2016. So this is part of a national conversation that's going on about how to make sure that felons become part of the community. And one way advocates say you make them part of the community is you grant them citizenship rights. And one of the most interesting components of this is that you might be surprised, but Koch Industries is very much in favor of this and participated in a forum at the University of Northern Iowa a couple of years ago that was arranged by a former legislator, Helen Miller, who's now member of the chair of the Iowa Board of Parole. So this is a discussion that legislators have been having for several years.
Mm-hmm. Let's before the break, let's touch on another area that has been in discussion for several years at the Iowa legislature, medical cannabis. There's been some change in the law there. Katerina, where are we now and what has advanced? I understand the chambers have advanced different bills.
Right. So a sticking point here in attempts to expand the medical cannabis program has been what amount of THC, which is a psychoactive component of cannabis, that can also, people say, can help some medical conditions. What level of THC should Iowans be allowed to purchase? And Governor Reynolds vetoed a bill last year. It was a bipartisan bill passed both chambers that would have allowed a certain amount of THC. She said it was too much and that the state medical cannabis advisory board had recommended a much lower amount and that she wasn't comfortable moving forward with this bill that passed. So this year, the House came in, proposed what that state board recommended. The Senate came in and proposed the same thing that they had passed last year and was then vetoed by the governor, recognizing that they would have to negotiate that down at some point. And so they were kind of just saying, we need the governor to give us a signal on what she would sign into law so we know what to move forward with. Mm-hmm. And Kay, she answered one of your questions last week.
She was on Iowa Press on Iowa PBS this weekend, and she basically said she will support what the Iowa Cannabidiol Board recommends, which is what the House Board has said, which is 4.5 grams for every 90 days in this level of THC. And one of the interesting things that she emphasized was that as currently proposed, this limit would not apply if you are terminally ill. And it would also be open to negotiation if you go back to your healthcare provider and that healthcare provider says, yes, you need more THC than the 4.5 grams per 90 days.
Mm-hmm. So does it sound like the different bills will find a compromise that the governor
Well, it sounds like the governor has said the governor has said this is what I will sign the House bill. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what will be advancing rather quickly, because I think they want to avoid having another midnight last day of session debate about medical marijuana.
Right.
But it's also interesting because I think, you know, there will be people on both sides of the aisle who are not happy with what the governor is endorsing. And there are some Iowans who say they're already using more THC than what this bill would cap them at. So it does raise questions about, you know, certain people in the state might face new limitations on the amount of THC that they can obtain.
Right. And in the meantime, after years of debate on this, Iowa is not in a vacuum. We have a number of states in the U.S. They allow even recreational use of marijuana with however amount of THC, including now our neighbor Illinois. Has that figured into the debate at all, or is this really something that legislators don't take into consideration?
I think that it is a factor. I think that when you ask Governor Reynolds or other Republicans, they'll point to the fact and say that we don't want to necessarily be doing something that Illinois is doing just because Illinois is doing it. So I don't think there's any appetite among Republicans for going towards recreational use. But there are concerns, just that people could be going across the river to get get other marijuana products from Illinois, and that might cause some damage to the program as it's currently constituted, and kind of make it harder for that program to be financially sustainable if people are going elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if in the 2 minutes we have left, Kay, I know you've seen some debate on this in subcommittee, the bottle bill, which I think dates back to the 1970s. I may be the
right,
only...
Right, it's a Bob Ray institution.
Right, I may be the only one in this group who remembers life in Iowa without the bottle bill and ditches full of cans and whatever. I mean, we see that to some mm-hmm. degree because plastic bottles have no deposit on them unless they have pop in them and so forth. But water bottles, we see. We had a lot of litter, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Kay, what's being discussed here in terms of an update of the bottle bill?
Well, there were two bills that were discussed in subcommittee hearings last week. One would completely eliminate the bottle bill by 2023, arguing that 8 in 10 Iowans has access to a recycling program and they can recycle these cans and bottles in that fashion. The other bill, which was debated, actually has emerged from a full committee, so is eligible for debate in the House. It would increase from 1 cent to 2 cents the amount that is given to redemption centers around the state for handling these empties. There's some question about how this would work because there's also a proposal in this bill for sort of mobile recycling trailers to be placed around the state. There are a lot of questions about it. And again, at this aforementioned discussion that the governor had on Iowa PBS this weekend, she sort of indicated that, you know, this is a perennial debate that people have, but there's very rarely a resolution. So it sounded as if she does not expect a bill on this topic to reach her desk.
Right. Grocers, we can say, do a lobby against this bill would like to get rid of it. It's something that they have to deal with, for instance.
Right.
Yeah.
And they argue that, you know, it brings filth into their stores when you have these empty cans that may not be the cleanest article in their store.
Kay Henderson is with us of Radio Iowa, Stephen Gruber Miller of the Des Moines Register, and our own Katarina Sestarek. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking, looking back at the funnel week, what survived that legislative hurdle last week and stays alive, so to speak, this session. Doesn't mean it will become law, but it, as I said, stays alive. We'll talk about it in just a minute. If you'd like to join us with your comments on legislation you hope would become law, 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer on this Legislative Monday with Katarina Sestarek of Iowa Public Radio, our state government reporter. Also inviting two other reporters who are every day covering the legislative session, O.K. Henderson, news director of Radio Iowa, Stephen Gruber Miller, state house reporter with the Des Moines Register. We're going over bills that survived last week's funnel. By that I mean proposals moved forward in the legislature because they were passed out of a full committee in the House or Senate. Join our conversation as we discuss this whole handful of pieces of legislation that have advanced. We want to talk about some of the legislation that didn't advance as well. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Katarina, Senate had some work requirements as a part of legislation. Explain what that was about. It advanced.
Right. So last year, the Senate actually passed some changes to public assistance. The House did not take those up. And this year, the Senate came back and said, Senate Republicans said that they were going to prioritize, you know, they call this welfare reform, and have advanced two related bills. One would require some Iowans on Medicaid to work or volunteer at least 20 hours a week. And It would also prohibit the state from waiving food assistance work requirements during economic recessions. This is something that, you know, a couple other states have done. It's been struck down in courts. And it's also something that, you know, advocates for children and family groups and health groups say, you know, this is something that could cause people to wrongly lose their health insurance or their food assistance. Mm-hmm. And then a second bill would require the State Human Services Agency to get an additional computer system to do extra checks on the eligibility of Iowans receiving public assistance. This is, again, something that advocates will say will cause people to fall off their public assistance and, you know, impacting children and families.
Comments from Kay or Stephen on these bills?
Senate Republicans have said this is a priority for them. The governor has indicated as early as last February that she supports the work requirements, and mm-hmm. they argue that in a state that has such a low unemployment rate, everybody needs to be working.
Right. I would say that the way that this is framed by Republicans, including the governor, is all about workforce, and that's been a big priority for Governor Reynolds, and that this is just kind of one of many diffuse proposals that would maybe address workforce needs.
Mm-hmm. And another thing they're working on with workforce is child care assistance. So they're saying, you know, I think you have some opponents of these Medicaid work requirements who say, you know, instead of doing that, you should help people, you know, give them the right conditions where they can actually be in the workforce and not have to worry about things like being at home with their children, things like that. So I know the House has advanced a few bills related to child care access. One would phase families receiving child care assistance out of the program as their income increases instead of having that cliff effect where they just fall off their assistance if they get a raise at work, for example. And then some others would tweak existing law to boost reimbursement rates for some child care providers.
Stephen, I wonder if you could bring us up to speed on, gun rights legislation over the past few years with Republicans in charge of both chambers, in the majority in both chambers. We've had a number of bills pass into law that favor those in favor of gun rights. And we have more, don't we?
We do. I think the biggest thing that's kind of out there right now is actually something that passed last year, which is a proposed constitutional amendment that would add the right to keep and bear arms to Iowa's constitution. There's a federal Second Amendment, but Iowa's constitution has no equivalent. So that needs to be passed again actually next year or the year after to appear on Iowans' ballots. And that's kind of the sort of overarching thing that will be best. There's a couple of other bills this year that are moving forward. I think one would allow EMTs to carry weapons if they're accompanying a SWAT team and they've trained with that SWAT team and are going into a sort of a dangerous active situation. There's others that would prevent cities and counties from regulating gun attachments. I think Republicans are saying that we need to have statewide rules on that. So if you're in one city, they can't ban certain weapons attachments, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's time to talk about, Kay, can I turn to you and talk about some of the things that did not make this legislative hurdle and have essentially died for this session? What's at the top of your list there?
Well, at the end of last week, it was announced that a bipartisan bill that had been advancing that would have limited rent increases for mobile home park residents and taken some other steps to provide some relief to the residents of parks which have recently been purchased by out-of-state companies. That completely failed to advance. Republicans in the House announced that they were not interested in quote-unquote price controls. The governor this weekend said she was surprised that had faltered mm-hmm. as it was trying to advance. So I would suspect that there will be attempts to add some sort of protection for these mobile home residents who've been facing very sizable increases in the rent on their lots in some other piece of legislation.
And I would think that might come in the form of maybe dealing less with rent, but possibly more with aspects like how much notice do you have to give residents before you increase the rent, or can you evict people without cause, things like that are other concerns beyond just the amount that rent has increased, because that seems to be what some Republicans are uncomfortable with.
Right. In at least some cases we've reported here, what's happening, and perhaps you can add to this, is in some cases these mobile home parks where people have lived for years or maybe even decades have become desirable real estate properties. And then they get sold and the new buyer wants to develop them, right? And wants to develop them, of course, in a different way to be more profitable. So is that what's behind these protections?
I think it's not always that they want to develop the property, but also just that if you have a property where there are people paying rent, that's a steady stream of income, right, if you own that. And even though people may own their mobile homes, they're paying rent on the land. And it might actually be difficult to move the home because of structural integrity, or it just might be costly to move. So mobile home, some people are saying, might be a little bit of a, maybe not a misnomer, but it's more difficult than you might think to move that. And so if you're someone who lives there and they increase your rent, you might not have a lot of options in terms of how you, if you have other places to go.
Mm-hmm. Right. They might face a choice between leaving behind the home that they purchased and invested in, and just, or just, you know, staying and trying to keep up with the steep rent increases that some of these companies have put on them.
And I think one thing that, you know, lawmakers have said is, you know, there's a lot of concern about, it's really these out-of-state companies that own homes in multiple states. They own parks in multiple states. You know, Republicans have said, well, it's a few bad apples. And Democrats even who support the legislation, and Republicans who support the legislation have said, we don't want to penalize, you know, sort of local Iowa park owners who are doing things the right way.
Mm-hmm. And there's a big concern because there's a real lack of housing in Iowa, and these mobile home parks provide affordable housing for many Iowans who could not otherwise afford to live in a house.
Right. Well, about 10 minutes, a little more than 10 minutes left with Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, Stephen Gruber Miller of the Des Moines Register, and our own Katarina Sestarek talking about bills that did and did not make it through the legislative funnel last week. Katarina, a number of LGBTQ issues did not make it. I wonder if you could bring us up to speed on those.
There was a bill that would ban conversion therapy for LGBTQ children that failed to advance, but there was a Republican lawmaker who heads up a committee that pledged to keep working on the issue. It didn't advance. There were people at a subcommittee meeting on both sides of the issue who thought there were some shortcomings in the bill, so he said that they would keep working on that. There was also a bill filed to remove gender identity from the Iowa Civil Rights Act, which could have just undermined all kinds of protections for transgender Iowans. That bill failed. And then there was also one that would require schools to notify parents of any classroom content that includes sexual orientation or gender identity, and allow students to opt out of that classroom time. That also failed to advance before the funnel.
And I think there were a lot of LGBTQ advocates earlier this year that were sort of alarmed by the number of bills on this topic that were being introduced in the legislature, but I don't believe any of them have actually survived the funnel.
Mm-hmm. Right. Stephen, did that surprise you that these issues, that none of them have survived, it seems? Based on what
I don't know
what
that I'm too surprised, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I think there's certainly lawmakers who are interested in taking some action on this topic, but I don't think it's a broad view among either House or Senate Republicans necessarily. So I don't see. Yeah.
Right. But last year, there definitely was, you know, that thought that maybe some of these would pass, because last year at the very end of session, Republicans amended a Health and Human Services budget bill to add an exception to the Iowa Civil Rights Act that would ban public funds from going, or public health insurance wouldn't be required to cover transition-related procedures for transgender Iowans. And so I think because that happened, that also kind of raised some alarms for LGBTQ advocates of kind of what's next.
Mm-hmm. Vaping is something that's been on the minds of legislators in Des Moines. Stephen, what's been happening there?
Well, we do have still alive bills that would raise the tobacco age for smoking and vaping to 21, and that would conform with what the federal government has done recently. So I guess you wouldn't actually see much effect because it's already that's already the age at the federal level. And then there was an unsuccessful attempt to add vaping to Iowa's Smoke-Free Air Act, which restricts where you can smoke in public places. And so there were some folks who wanted to add vaping onto that, and that did not succeed. So
Let's pivot back to some
vaping
of the things.
Vaping will still be allowed in those places.
Pivot back to some of the issues, the bills that have advanced. Kay, I believe you covered some debate about this a bill that bans employers from inserting microchips. Tell us more about
that. Really fascinating. When I did some research on this topic, other states have already taken this step. There is a Wisconsin high-tech company that has employees who have embedded a microchip that's smaller than a grain of rice in between their thumb and forefinger, and they use it as a instead of a security guard, a card to access areas of the building in which they work. They even swipe it on vending machines to buy food in their workplace. But there was discussion at the subcommittee meeting about, you know, if you a member, a representative of the labor movement in Iowa said, if you can't require employees to be members of a union at their workplace, how are you going to require them to have a microchip implanted? And this did have support. Bipartisan support in committee when it advanced. And there are actually some states which expressly forbid any implantation of a microchip. There is FDA approval for implanting microchips related to medical treatment.
Well, and when in a few days, we'll switch time again. We will spring forward, the old seasonal back and forth. This has been on legislators' minds, hasn't it, Kay?
Exactly.
What's been being debated?
It's always on their minds.
What's going on here in terms of establishing what? Daylight savings time year round or one or the other year round?
Exactly. And that did not advance. They have had a perennial debate, can we say that, about this subject, especially among the farmers who are members of the Iowa legislature, and a growing chorus from parents who, you know, do not like the idea that their kids have their sort of internal clocks all screwed up when we spring forward or we fall back. But there's really no consensus on what may occur in Iowa in that regard. The state of Washington is among the most recent to say we're going to stick to one time all the time.
So there was serious consideration that before this failed, Iowa could have a different time than Illinois or Minnesota?
Right, that we would stay with daylight saving time all the time rather than flip back and forth.
Interesting. The state insect was debated. Who wants to talk about that? Stephen?
Sure. I'll take that one. Yeah. There's a bill that would make Iowa's state insect the honeybee. Most states already have a state insect. Iowa does not. Actually, several states already have the honeybee as their state insect as well. So there's some interest in that. It would sort of recognize, the honey producers and things like that that do exist in Iowa. And there's might I say, a little bit of buzz about that.
I might say there's a swarm of states that have the honeybee already, 16.
What haven't we talked about? We've got about 5 minutes left. What's still on your lists that should be discussed? Kay, was that you?
Well, I'm going to defer to Stephen. He looked just as if he was ready to unload here, so I'll go right ahead.
I just wanted to bring up that one of the other priorities of the governor is occupational licensing changes in Iowa to make it easier for people from out of states with different licensing requirements in certain professions to become employed here, and it's another part of her workforce kind of package. So there's several bills related to occupational licensing in the legislature, including a proposal from the governor, and it would just kind of give several different professions reciprocity with other states so that it would be easier to be licensed here. And you know, the governor and other Republicans talk a lot about how there's maybe too much regulation, and this is part of them wanting to roll back some red tape.
Stephen, perhaps.
I would say one bill.
Sorry, go ahead.
A bill that I would mention that did not survive the funnel deadline, something that was one of the most contentious hearings I saw at the State House so far this year, was a bill that would require law enforcement agencies to collect information on offenses by immigrants who are not U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents. This was something there were several community members who came to the Capitol to say, you know, it's discriminatory and it would require racial profiling, which some of the law enforcement agencies actually also said. And so that bill did not advance.
And as we've been talking about these policy bills, one thing that I'm sort of anticipating as we move into the next phase of the legislative session is that they will be consumed with the governor's Invest in Iowa Act, a proposal that was not subject to the funnel, a proposal which is voluminous and includes just a bunch of stuff that legislators have been talking about over the past few years and that will really engender a lot of debate.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts as we look forward to the rest of this legislative session?
I would agree with Kay that the Invest in Iowa Act will take up a lot of effort. I think also, you know, lawmakers will still have to pass a budget for the new year. That's something that they'll need to get to now that sort of there's the first deadline for policy bills. But tax and budget bills, they're still going to need to consider.
Perhaps a few words to...
And the legislature also still has not passed K-12 education funding, which is something that they usually do, one of the first things they do, or that gets signed into law. And so I think that that's something we'll still be looking for either this week or next week, likely.
Mm-hmm. Also a...
Schools have until April...
Sorry, go ahead.
Schools have until April 15th to certify their budgets. And last week, the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader told us that their message to school districts is start planning. You're going to get something in the range of $100 million in new money in bulk form. Mm-hmm. And you can start planning your spending priorities for the next academic year with that knowledge.
After the beautiful sunny weekend we had, we shouldn't leave out the solar bill. Where is that? Is that something that is not subject to the funnel I'm seeing here?
Right. So that was not subject to the funnel, but it still got discussed at the end of last week. It is a bill that was really controversial last year. It passed the Senate last year, and it would have allowed utilities to add additional fees for solar users, people with solar panels. This had a lot of opposition from environmental groups as well as pork producers. And so now there's been a compromise bill. It's being changed to something that all the stakeholders seem to agree on that would... instead of allowing utilities to charge these fees right away, it would, a little bit down the road, start a study of the impact that solar users have on the electrical grid, on the system, and then lawmakers would be able to use that information to figure out if utilities should be able to charge those fees.
I'm looking here, too, at some of the other items that did not make it through the funnel, and anti-vaccine bills. So who can tell us quickly about those?
There were several measures that were introduced that would have, provided people with essentially more information about what supporters of the bill said were risks from vaccines. That would either come through the schools or through doctors, or there were just several different proposals. And only one of those has advanced, and that's one that would put information about immunizations on death certificates for children ages 3 and under. You would just have to list on the death certificate what the date and what the last immunization was. I think that there was a lot of interest, I guess, in this subject and filing bills about this, but most of those ultimately did not make it through the funnel, except for the one that I just mentioned.
One of the oddest bills that did not make it through the funnel would have required the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Association to offer pole vaulting as a competitive sport for high school girls in the state. Didn't make it through. It was sponsored by Representative Ted Gassman. And for those who don't know, he was a pole vaulter in high school.
Well, funny coincidence there. All right, Kay Henderson, News Director of Radio Iowa, Stephen Gruber Miller, State House Reporter with the Des Moines Register, and Katarina Sestarik, our own state government reporter. Thanks for an hour looking at what stayed alive and what didn't in the Iowa legislature during Funnel Week last week. Thank you all.
Thank you very much, Ben. Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.